This is DW News live from Berlin. President Trump is set to unveil his pick for a key seat on the U.S. Supreme Court. Media reports say he's chosen the conservative judge Amy Coney Barrett to replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Will the nomination pour fuel on the fire of a divisive campaign just weeks before the presidential election? Another major political shakeup in Lebanon. Mustafa Adib, the man designated to become the country's next prime minister, steps down amid political infighting. And French media say the main suspect in the Paris knife attack confesses, saying he was angered by cartoons of Mohammed in the satirical magazine Charlie Hebdo. I'm Michael Oku. Welcome to the program. We begin with a major political fight in the U.S. over the vacant seat on the Supreme Court. Media reports say President Donald Trump will nominate Amy Coney Barrett to fill that seat. She would replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who died last week. Barrett currently serves as a federal appeals court judge and is known for her conservative religious views. Trump told journalists on Friday he'd made up his mind, but he refused to confirm the speculation ahead of an official announcement on Saturday.
I'll be announcing it tomorrow.
For more, I'm joined by Erwin Collier, professor at Bard College in Berlin. Erwin, it's really nice to have you with us.
Nice to be here.
What do we know about Amy Coney Barrett? In essence, what effect would she have on the Supreme Court?
To start probably with the most important, she is 48 years old, which means with good health, she could be around for a long time. She clerked after law school with Antony Scalia, Justice Antony Scalia, who was a very conservative justice, one of the originalists. So she's part of the school of jurisprudence in the United States that believes you have to second guess what the founders and authors of the Constitution would have said had they lived in 2020. So it puts a very conservative spin on what she does. She's been an appeals judge since 1997. It was a very controversial hearing, but split completely on party lines. She was approved. Before that, she was a professor of law at the University of Notre Dame. But perhaps the most interesting for the politics, she is firmly in the anti-abortion side of the debate. As a very conservative Catholic, Catholicism dominates the Supreme Court. She would be the sixth Catholic justice of the Supreme Court right now. But that by itself doesn't tell you much because, as everyone knows, a religion like that goes from Sotomayor all the way to Judge Barrett. So the Chief Justice will no longer be the swing vote in coming elections.
That's clearly part of the plan.
That's clearly plan A.
If she is, in fact, Trump's nomination, how likely is she to actually get that seat? I mean, the Republicans certainly have the numbers.
Barring unforeseen skeletons in her closet, which strikes me as unlikely, given that she's already been through a pretty serious vetting, it's a done deal. They knew that before Trump even announced it, which made it was also sort of peculiar. They said, we approve and we don't know who he's going to name, which is a rather odd way of doing things. So the Republicans are going to stand behind this nomination.
So turning to another big factor in this election altogether, the coronavirus pandemic, of course. The United States has hit another new milestone. Let's get this right. 7 million cases, now more than 200,000 deaths. How significant is this likely to be going into the election in November?
Well, as the old saw goes, one person's death is a tragedy. 200,000 is a statistic. This has been weighing on the American body politic. And the difference in the polls, when you see that it's been a steady difference between Joe Biden and Donald Trump to Biden's favor, that difference is built on a pandemic that has literally had no presidential leadership or a failed presidential leadership. That won't change. So a distraction from reality with another reality, fighting about abortion rights, gun rights, libertarian interpretations of the U.S. Constitution is an attempt to put a little bit of smoke when you're running out of mirrors.
I like that. Smoke when you're running out of mirrors. Erwin Collier from Bard College Berlin, really appreciate your insights.
Glad to be here.
As we've just heard, the pandemic is playing a major role in the election campaign. Here's a look at other developments in the coronavirus pandemic around the world. Germany has confirmed the largest number of new infections since April, with more than 2,500 in the latest 24-hour period. Japan's Prime Minister Yoshihide Suga has told the United Nations General Assembly that his country is determined to host the Olympics next year after the Games were postponed due to the pandemic. An experimental vaccine being developed by Johnson & Johnson is proving to produce a strong immune response against the virus, according to the latest results. The early to mid-stage trial is being backed by the U.S. government. Now, Italy was one of the first countries to impose a coronavirus lockdown back in March. The international community watched on as the country's hospitals overflowed and struggled to cope with the spike in cases. But now it's a different story. As many European countries begin to suffer a second wave of cases, Italy has managed to keep its numbers relatively low.
Images that can't be forgotten. In March, Italian military trucks carried dead bodies away to relieve an overloaded cemetery in Bergamo. Italians were gripped by grief and fear as the outbreak of the coronavirus pandemic upheaved society. Now, a little normality has returned to Italian life. Bars and restaurants are open, the mandatory temperature check serving as a reminder to stay vigilant. Other European countries, including France, Spain, and the UK, are staring down a second wave of the virus. But numbers here are staying relatively low. The figures in Italy have stabilised for several weeks. We are averaging 1,500 cases per day. Compared to the rest of Europe, the epidemic hit Italy earlier. So Italy was very aware of the problem and immediately put in place a very severe and strong containment plan. Experts say this is why Italy hasn't had to impose new restrictions being put in place in other parts of Europe. Apart from the strictly policed lockdown and the robust contact tracing, Italians have willingly adopted mask wearing. Italian citizens have been very respectful of all the rules. When I see on the news the images of other European cities, I see many more people without masks than in Italy. But they don't have much of a choice, because they risk being hit with a hefty €400 fine.
I just think that people obey the masks here, and I think the police enforce it, and that's important.
It's not to say there won't be a rise in cases. Authorities say they are expecting one. But many here are hoping that the current measures in place will make the second wave more ripple than tsunami.
Let's take a look at some of the other stories making news around the world at this hour. The death toll from a jihadist attack in northeast Nigeria has risen to 30. Insurgents linked to the Islamic State ambushed a convoy transporting the governor of Borno State near the town of Baga. Officials said the terrorists stole an armored personnel carrier, a gun truck, and six convoy vehicles. At least 26 people have died in a military plane crash in eastern Ukraine. The aircraft crashed and burst into flames while landing in the city of Chuiv. Authorities say one person survived. Most of the victims were young military cadets. Senior officials and survivors have paid tribute to the victims of a deadly neo-Nazi attack on Munich's Oktoberfest 40 years ago. The bombing claimed 13 lives. It was initially considered to be the act of a loner frustrated by society. This year, the incident was reclassified as the work of a far-right extremist. Turkish prosecutors have issued arrest warrants for 82 people, including a mayor and members of a pro-Kurdish opposition party. It's part of an investigation into deadly riots in 2014 sparked by anger at the government's perceived inaction against militants from the Islamic State group along the Syrian border. The man designated to be the next prime minister of Lebanon has resigned amid an impasse in efforts to form a new government. Mustafa Adib was parachuted into the position in the wake of last month's devastating blast in the capital, Beirut, and the subsequent resignation of the government. A former ambassador to Germany, Adib blamed political infighting over cabinet positions for his decision to step down. Lebanon has been gripped by months of protests over corruption and a protracted economic crisis. Here's what Adib had to say about his resignation.
It became clear that a cabinet based on the principles I insist on for protecting national unity under our constitution was bound to fail. I apologize that the search for forming a government will have to go on. Whoever has chosen to follow me for this difficult task, I wish him all the luck, given the dangers our country, people, and economy are facing.
French media say the main suspect in a knife attack in Paris near the former offices of Charlie Hebdo have confessed to the incident. The reports say the 18-year-old born in Pakistan was angry about the satirical magazine having published cartoons of Muhammad, the central figure of Islam. Another suspect has been released. The stabbing took place as the trial was underway of suspects in the deadly attack on the magazine in 2015.
A sickening sense of deja vu in this Paris neighborhood. First responders wheel out the victims at the same site of the most infamous attack against press freedom in France, the former offices of Charlie Hebdo, where 12 people died in 2015, shocking France and the world.
We heard shouts around midday. We ran outside, and that was all we saw before the police arrived. I saw a victim lying on the ground, covered in blood. That's when I panicked, and then people started panicking and shouting too.
After savagely attacking the victims, who were taking a smoking break, the principal suspect fled the scene. Police said they arrested the man nearby on the Place de la Bastille. They have also detained several more of his alleged associates in the attack's aftermath. Those injured in the incident, staff at a documentary production firm in Charlie Hebdo's former building. French authorities have already opened an investigation into the attack. The French Interior Minister and the city mayor visited the scene. Anti-terror prosecutors are in charge of the probe into the incident.
We've decided to launch an investigation into attempted murder with a terrorist motive, so crime associated with terrorism.
The attack happened right in the middle of a mass trial of 14 people in connection with the 2015 massacre. The latest incident signals France's battle against terrorism isn't over yet.
Switching to sports now, and in the Bundesliga, Frankfurt kicked off match day two on Friday night by beating Hertha Berlin 3-1 in the German capital. With Frankfurt already 2-0 up, Sebastian Rode fired in their third goal in the 71st minute, and it was a stunner. Rode's rocket flew past the reach of the outstretched Hertha goalkeeper. The win puts Frankfurt in first place, at least for one day. Spanish side Atletico Madrid have signed forward Luis Suarez from rivals Barcelona on a two-year contract worth around 6 million euros. The Uruguay national passed his medical on Friday. Suarez was Barcelona's second-highest goal scorer of all time after Lionel Messi. But after a recent coaching change, the 33-year-old was told he was no longer part of the club's plan. Suarez won four league titles with Barcelona and a Champions League. In Formula One, defending champion Lewis Hamilton topped qualifying for Sunday's Russian Grand Prix. The Mercedes driver now has the chance to match Michael Schumacher's record 91 career wins. Hamilton was followed by Red Bull's Max Verstappen. Valtteri Bottas was third fastest. Meanwhile, Ferrari's Sebastian Vettel crashed in qualifying and will start 15th. You're watching DW News. Up next, World Stories, The Week in Reports. I'm Michael Loku in Berlin. For all of us here, thanks for watching.